before I'm dropped off.
I'm neutral on whether we start with the two issues that David brought up. No, actually, I'm not neutral. I'd like to work through some of the things that I know we can get consensus on and get some head, steam built up. And then also look at all of the proposed deletions, modification, updates for a triple asterisk. Those are items that require some programming gymnastics. So they need time to get that done, too. Right? Is that right, Joe?
That is correct.
So the ones that are going to require some considerable programming changes are items 13 and 14.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, with those...
And 11.
Yeah, with the boxes that have asterisks on, we need to go back and check with the programmers and the IT people and see if those requests are possible and how much that would cost. And the issue with it is, we have an existing system that people have been using for the last 6 years. And so how, and the system compiles everything based on how it is programmed. And so if we change it, how does that affect all the information that we've gathered the previous 6 years? So we just want to make sure that everything jives together.
Hearing no input, I'm going to just start working down the list then. Okay, item one. I'd like to add the constitutional language immediately under the heading on the call. And I'd like to take an excerpt of the constitutional language so it includes only that which applies to the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
Good idea.
So you're talking right here?
Right under the heading, you bet. So, do you have that handy, what the proposed... Okay.
We can bring back that at our next meeting in that language.
All right.
It's basically the same as the highlighted stuff.
Yeah. We'll do that for the handout at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay. Off to a roaring start. Then staff, number two, we want a closer correspondence between the application, the call, and the criteria so that they're in order. And so I this is a staff function, so what does staff want to say or need to say about that?
Yeah, that's something that we can do. We just, I think it's important that we work on all three of those, the criteria, the proposal, just so that we don't want to say this is how the proposal is going to look, and then we change the criteria,
yeah,
and we have to go back. So we just, it's going to be kind of a fluid movement.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is to make sure that it's consistent and that there's clarity between what we're asking people to write about and what we're ranking them on and evaluating them on. That's where,
the way I understand it, not necessarily every question, there will be one question for one criteria. That we may end up having a criteria, say, that's budget, and there may be three or four questions on budget,
right,
that won't be, one question following.
Right. But I think what we don't want is that people are evaluated on things that are not part of a criteria that was established.
Correct.
Teaming on to Julie's, when you hold the request for funding sample next to the call for funding request and then put the score sheet next to that, there's these giant gaps, and it doesn't cross across all three. I believe it should. If it's going to be in the document that they give us as the application, everything in this document should be showing up somewhere in a score, because otherwise, why did we ask them? Some of it is just like, here's the text summary of it. You don't really score that. Here's our executive overview. But all of these bits and pieces, I know when I go through and score, as I read them, I'm writing the scores in the margins, and there'll be a page and a half with nothing because none of it was scored. And I've always thought, and I'm seeing nods, I've always thought that was a little weird that we need to have the same stuff go across all the way, because if we're not, why did we ask them for it? Which, of course, just makes the scoring longer, but then at least we're scoring something that we read versus reading it and scratching our heads and wondering about it.
If I could suggest that you take your first effort to correspond all three of them, and where you can draw the lines across, maybe then we could look at it and say where something doesn't have a line that goes across all three, something like that. I'm not necessarily in agreement totally that something that's in the application has to have a criterion attached to it. Some things are general information, but I understand generally, and I agree.
Yeah, just these big gaps.
Yeah, yeah.
That don't make sense.
So I think once you staff has had a chance to go through and correspond all three across and get them in the same order, it will be easier to pick out if there are any gaps that should be there or not should be, you know, shouldn't be.
Okay. Yeah, we'll definitely do that. And I would also call to your attention the blue sheets here. And if you look throughout the packet, the staple blue sheet packet, there behind the dark blue, or after the dark blue sentences, there's a smaller green, and it's a criteria,
right.
3-4. So that's, and this is what the proposers get.
Right.
This is what they see. So that's kind of how they know, okay, we're getting scored on criteria, whatever, in this part.
Where did the blue sheet come from? Just so I'm clear on that.
It's a worksheet that's provided on our website for project managers when they apply.
Because I heard the project manager had given us an idea of that, and I was wondering if that was this. Or if this is what we're at. I assume this is what we're using.
If you meant something I said that was confusing?
Yeah.
I meant to say that this is what the proposers will complete to submit to us.
Okay,
that's correct?
That clarifies it.
Yeah. So
I was wondering if someone changed.
No.
This is what was on our website the last perfect. Round as a worksheet to assist people prior to entering their data in the online system.
So it looks a lot like our applications.
This is the application.
It's pared down. Like this has a lot of extra stuff. Like, it doesn't. I mean, you know, you've got all the possibilities for all the plans addressed, or all the possibilities for all the section priorities. And we don't get all of those, obviously. We get the ones that apply.
Yeah, you'll see that the instructions say check the top one applicable priority.
Very good.
So we get the compilation for
correct.
Staff after they transform all the application.
Actually, I think are we going informally at this point?
I don't have any trouble with that.
Okay, that's probably easier. Looking at this, this already is like giantly helpful for me because it's got the criteria with the rank score listed next to whatever the thing was. From if I were the person filling it out, I'd want to know how many points is this worth. Like, are we going to, and maybe we should, start weighting some of these. You know, everybody's going to check something that applies in these ecological planning regions and the science base. They're going to check the boxes because they have to check the boxes. But does that mean it's 6 points for them to check the boxes?
Well,
not necessarily. So if we move to things where something's worth 1 point or 2 points, or maybe it's just a yes-no trigger, you know, because you forgot to check the boxes, but then why are we scoring on the box checking? But if I were the applicant, I'd want to know how many points these things were worth, because then I'd know where to put my time in.
You know, I decided in my mind to do the scoring question at the very end once we've chewed over everything as to what should be in there and what shouldn't be.
That makes sense.
Okay?
Yep.
But what we don't get when we get the applications is the dark green that says criteria one. That doesn't show up in our...
That'd be really helpful.
Yeah.
I like that.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Well, especially if you're new.
That's the whole thing we can change.
Very good.
Yeah, because you hit next year, the, what year is this, 2016? Good God. You hit 2017, you're going to have probably at least a couple new council members, and they're going to be like I was the first year, going, where does this match to? And even if it's in the same order, it would be really nice to just make that as simple as possible. Ron, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my gosh. We're just talking
about... Have you ever driven across Nebraska?
Across Nebraska?
Have you ever driven across Nebraska?
Yes.
In the Sonoma?
You could be anywhere.
You're more interesting, I'll say that.
Well, gee, that's a lame, pompous type of one.
At least we're not putting you to sleep.
They'll all look the same everywhere in the park.
So, is everybody satisfied with our understanding on item two?
Yes.
I'd like to hear it again.
Well, staff is going to link the application to the call and the criteria so that they all are in the same order and that they're all cross-referenced.
Okay.
So when you get, you know, when we get our binder with all 45 proposals, there will be marks on each proposal where this section applies to criteria 4, for example. And they'll go in order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, down to however many criteria we end up with. And that's all staff's job. They're going to do all that.
All right.
You like it?
Well, yeah, I've got, this is a very difficult way to operate, so I'm a little bit in the dark. But I'll find out what's going on, and...
He's in a fog.
And just go from there.
Well, Ron, what we're going to do here today is come to an agreement on a package that we're going to submit at the beginning of the next meeting for full council approval.
Okay.
So, you know, we'd love for you to participate today as much as you're able to, but you're going to get it all at the beginning of the next meeting.
Okay. I've got, some real quandaries. That's why trying to do this telephone thing but no fault of my own, almost all of the next meetings I am out of the state, so I've got a little problem there.
Well, it'll be on the website, so you'll be able to see it and give us feedback.
Yes, and I will do that, trust me. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Are we done?
No. we're gonna be here till noon or 1 or 2, depending on how everybody feels about that.
Oh, okay.
We're just gonna keep working as much as we can.
But if you don't want to hang on for this part, we're just talking about the call language now.
Yes, I get that. And I appreciate Jane, you're working on it, because I think it needs a lot of help and make it easier for us as well as the applicants. And if I can add to this, I'd be happy to do that. But I don't have any strong thoughts. This is not in my wheelhouse.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Moving on to the next item, before you sign off. In past years, like 2 years ago, we added a section to the application and to the call that showed an area of emphasis that the council was particularly concerned about going into this next year, its next round. Do you have any areas of particular emphasis that aren't already covered in all the ecoregion priorities?
Well, I really have just... one major concern, and that is, and my good friend David and I have talked about this at length, and that and it has nothing to do necessarily with food plots, but I'm very nervous when I see the council moving into pretending to be wildlife managers and setting the priorities for managing the land that we acquire. I don't think that's what we're there for. I don't think we're qualified for that. And so I don't like that direction. We don't do that with fish managers, forest managers, whatever. And I understand my some concerns about the food plots, but I think those are minor compared to us pretending and setting criteria for our wildlife managers. I think the council itself will be in for a tremendous amount of criticism if we give the impression that we are not only buying this land, we're telling everybody how it should be managed, and I don't like that.
Okay. That is something that applies to David's two documents that he introduced, but I'm going to ask you again, is there any area of emphasis that you think we should be paying attention to in 2016 in our deliberations going through fall that aren't already covered in all of our five ecoregions?
Yeah, it gets mind-boggling a little bit. What I found is the applications, I look at them, peruse them, and like David liked to say, are we getting a bang for our buck? I look at that. Are we going to move the needle? I kind of look at that. But I have found over the years that the greatest value I get is when we have the applicants come in and tell us their story, what's going to happen, what they're doing. We can ask questions. I get more out of that than I do when they fill out the call. Maybe that's the fault of the criteria that we're setting out. I do not know, but maybe that's why we're in this process. But
I don't.
That's been my experience.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and I don't think we could ever do one and not the other. I think that they're both critical to the process.
For sure they are.
Yeah.
It gives us. For one thing, you get to farm some questions when they do come in there because you're somewhat familiar with what they're talking about.
But you know, back to an area of emphasis. Just to look back at this last year, one sort of emerged due to the focus on the governor's prairie and pheasant plan, and the emphasis on some of the work that was. That would have benefit to pheasants, but as we all know, that benefits anything in the prairie. You know, what's good for pheasants is good for a myriad of other species. So, you know, that was kind of an area of emphasis that came externally. But as for me, I don't really have any area of emphasis other than what's already laid out in the call. And besides which, I think it might be a little bit misleading because there's no teeth there. It's not something that would trump everything else in the call. So I don't know if that's just feel-good language, you know, that we put in the past. But it was on somebody's concern, so I want it on our discussion today. I can do without it.
Mm-hmm. I apologize, Jean. My reception here is such a I didn't catch all of that. But
okay.
I pretty much I put a lot of confidence in your judgment. Trust me, you and I have been doing things like this for a long time. I do have one thought, and that is, maybe you've already addressed this. It seems to me, I think the Champlin proposal brought this out, is that they come to us for X amount of dollars, and then what? And then I know it's in the call about how many other funds are you seeking, et cetera, but it seems like there's a chance for double dipping there, and maybe we need to clarify that.
Okay. I'm going to have to cogitate on that one for a while. Maybe we can all do that.
Ryan, are you suggesting that we ask them to apply for one or the other?
No, not necessarily. I think what maybe we should do is have them delineate where the money is going. And maybe, you know, I can't recall, but maybe we do. I don't want to go one or the other, because a lot of our projects that we deal with cross the line between clean water, wildlife habitat, fish habitat. So I think it's just important for us to know how will our money be used in the scope of this project, and not just mixed up with clean water funds or any other funds. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say here. Because I got the feeling that we're kind of being duped a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it's just a feeling and there's nothing to it.
Well, I think we have to never lose sight of the fact of, you know, whether what the application is for is constitutional or not, for our fund only. And it's interesting under that criteria to see if it does have other aspects that may be complementary, but there's a line between them, certainly.
Yes. And then, you know, in the big picture, Jane, that does it really matter where the money comes from as long as the bottom line gets moved and you know, in the big picture? If something good happens, who cares from down the road what pot of money did what? So you got that going too. If it's a good project, it's a good project.
David, were you?
I'm just thinking it might be helpful to ask applicants to identify where else they're applying for funds so that we have visibility to that. And also to know that they've actually thought about it instead of just coming to us maybe. Or maybe we know that they've just come to us and they're not going anywhere else. But that gets to the leverage question and the willingness to look for leverage as well.
Well, we do have that laid out in the application, in the budget spreadsheet, anticipated leverage.
But it doesn't say where you're looking. It says where you've got
where
the
you've
money
got,
in the past.
Where you've got
yeah, it's got dollar amounts. There's on page 4 of the blue pages, there's the relationship to other funds, and it talks about, you know, clean water and all of those. If we expanded that out into
bonding,
yeah, like where else would
general
we be getting
fund
money to be used for this project, and just kind of expand that out into something a little more useful, that'd be a logical place to put it, to just sort of add in there.
Yeah, why couldn't we put bonding, general fund, membership
list
donations?
List where you're going to get the money.
Yep, yeah.
And also where you're applying.
Currently.
Right. So not necessarily just the known funds, but the trying for funds for the project. See how brilliant we're being?
How do you like that, Ron?
I like that. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that.
Okay.
James? I would just make the comment that we want to make sure that we're not preventing anybody from asking for money. And if I was a project manager and I had a project that I really liked and I wanted to get funding, I would put applications out to anywhere I can, wherever there's available funding. So we just want to make sure that, you know, just because you asked for LCCMR money doesn't mean you're now disqualified.
No, it's not controlling. Right. It's informative.
And it can be preceded by a statement that says, we just want to know. That this is just for transparency purposes and not limitation.
We commonly ask those questions during the presentation.
Yeah, they'd be a little less surprised if it was on the front end, too.
It also gives some actual indication to whether or not leverage has been thought about seriously or just a plug number.
I think it's important to ask, but also just to understand that the project's are eligible for multiple pools at the same time, and can receive projects from multiple pools at the same time. You know, I mean, there's only so many things that are eligible for Outdoor Courage versus LCCMR versus, and so it shouldn't be, you know, qualifier necessarily, but it is informative.
Yeah, I mean, as a trustee of a private foundation, you know, we always ask, you know, where else have you applied? Where have you been successful in the past? You know, give us texture to what this overall request is so that we understand it.
Right. I'd just like to note that Joe, Julie, and Mark have kind of sat on the other side of the table from us over the years, and they're not the only ones. I mean, we've got people in the audience. This is a working session, and if you have anything that you think is important that we're missing or that you'd like to add, I think you're more than welcome. I know you're more. I welcome you. Strongly encourage you. Speak up. Now's the time.
Jane, could I add something?
Yeah.
I just thought of this, and maybe other council members have had the same thought, but, you know, we have, I don't know the number, but 5, 6, 7 different prairie presentations, and I go, oh, my. I mean, another one, and I go, are these coordinated? Is this, you get overwhelmed with the prairie request, because I mean you want to do the right thing. There we go. How many of these are we doing, and are they coordinated? Are we moving the needle, etc.? Anybody else have those thoughts as they look at the proposals?
Well, I'd like to respond to that at first just by noting that down the list of our worksheet that we've got in front of us, that issue has been raised before about judging within ecoregions rather than against the whole population of applicants.
Yes.
You know, so that prairie plans are competing against prairie plans and forest and, you know, et cetera.
Exactly.
So that, I think we're going to address that, Ron, and I don't know that we're going to get to it today, but it's not ignored, certainly.
Okay. Yeah, well, then you all have had those same thoughts as you look at them.
And another thing that might lead to greater ability to differentiate is laying out budget in a more detailed fashion that breaks out acquisition from restoration from enhancement, because some of the prairie projects are all, you know, are acquisition-based and some of them are restoration or enhancement-based, and so there's a big difference there, too.
Yes, indeed.
And we want everything, you know. So,
yeah.
What else is on your mind?
I tell you, it's a fogging here from Kansas. We're coming up to towards Lincoln. Just so you all know, I was down there filming pheasant hunting. There were pheasants were attacking women and children down there in Kansas. So they asked me to come down and, you know, protect the people.
Well, you're a good man.
Thank you.
They couldn't have asked for anyone better.
Well, thank you. I think I'll hang up. The whole deal's in good hands over there.
Well, Ron,
okay?
Ron, let's make sure that we continue to talk in the absence of your attending meetings. You know, just keep in touch with everybody.
I will. My good friend David and I, we have phone chats, and we'll have some more. And I always enjoy those. So, I'll reach out to you too, Jane.
Thank you. Before you hang up, Julie has something to say.
Well, I'm just curious as if we should, before Ron's off, if we should talk about the food plot. David brought forward a written document of the discussion, and I know it's very important for Ron. And
can you hear that, Ron?
No, I can't hear it. Can you interpret it for me?
Julie was saying before you hang up, maybe we should work through the food plot document that David prepared, because that is something that you have interest in.
But he hasn't got the document.
I do. David and I have talked about it. One of his concerns is that is a food plot should be a food plot, and I certainly understand that. I also understand that DNR does it to save some money and get their food plots planted without costing them so much as a crop sharing thing. And I guess in the perfect world, we wouldn't do that. And I, the main criteria, the concern there is if we put a food plot in and because it's crop shared, and we get a bad winter and the deer rate what's left and there is nothing, then that's not a good scenario either. So David and I tend to agree on that part of it. I just didn't want us to be acting as wildlife managers here, and the food plot comes under that category. It's nothing more than a tool that a wildlife manager might use. I also know, as a veteran pheasant hunter, that other hunters I always think there are not enough food plots. So I didn't want to get us in position of making headlines that says the LaSalle Stands Council forbids, bans food plots. I mean, you know, that would not be good for our reputation. I'll just say that. But I saw what David is proposing, and there's nothing that jumps out at me there except I don't want us to go too far as wildlife managers because we ain't.
I appreciate it. I hear what you're saying. As we're moving along here, it seems to me that these two issues, trails and food plots, really are issues that need to be addressed by the full council in a meeting. And they're not really appropriate for us to talk about today because we can't do any action on them anyway. And they're very meaty matters. And I would just ask that they be added to the next agenda.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. And the trails is another issue. I feel duped by the Crow Wing trail system that we didn't catch on to, but trails can be closed too from that standpoint, and trails can be functioning as for habitat for them. They create edge, you can plant them with clover. I mean, there's a lot of advantages there to trails, but they also can be a pain. And as a grouse hunter, I know that too. But maybe a simpler solution is let the wildlife managers deal with that.
So, I'm thinking this could be on a future agenda. It doesn't have to be immediately on the next one. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be incorporated into the collar criteria, at a future meeting, after the future meeting, when we have full council input.
And I don't have any problem with that. The one exception, I think, I have a concern with the DNR's position that they can't track what properties are purchased by us in a larger tract of property. And it has to do both with food plots, because that's how it came up. But there's a bigger issue there. What if they sell a WMA at some point, for whatever reason?
David and I talked about that too, and I agree with him.
But money goes back. Yeah. I mean, I don't believe it to be true, what they said. And I think we need clarification on that, because if they can't track the properties, the exact properties that they're buying with our money, they're kind of in violation of the agreements they have with us.
Mm-hmm. As every manager is of every project.
Absolutely. And so I threw that into the food plot because that's how it came up. But it's actually a bigger issue.
Yeah.
And I think we need to dig into that bit.
So are you okay with putting it at a future meeting that you will
Absolutely.
Be at when you're in attendance? When will that? Yeah. Do you have any times that you won't be?
The next scheduled meeting in 2 weeks I'm out of town for, but the two in February I'm here for.
So could we put this on the agenda for the first meeting in February?
You're welcome to put it on an agenda anytime you wish. My whole purpose in writing this down is that conversation on these two issues has some emotion to it. And I wanted to start to have discussion that's based in what are the real decisions that we might be faced with, and what can we do, or should we do, or shouldn't we do, and what are the components of the issue. As everyone knows, I think food plots on land purchased with this money is wrong. And I understand that I'm in the minority on that, and I can accept that. And I, unlike some political venues, I'm willing to be interested in compromise. But I don't think it's a black and white issue, yes or no. I think there are pieces of it that we ought to think about. You know, the Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't allow GMOs. I'd love to hear from them why they don't, and then make an intelligent decision about whether or not we should think about that, instead of just, you know, it sounds bad to me, let's not do it. Because I don't know enough about the issue. I know enough to be dangerous. I don't know enough to make a really informed decision on that. And I suspect I'm not completely alone in that. And so my purpose was just to try to lay out the components of the issues for us to talk about. I'm sure I missed some. I would encourage others to add to that so that we can have a robust discussion and make informed decisions about what we want to do with all of these issues that are in front of us. Because they're important issues that we get resolution and we become very clear for the people applying for money so they're not blindsided. Because, you know, an applicant thinks they're doing the right thing, and I think they're doing the wrong thing, and Julie thinks they're doing the right thing, and that's a terrible position to put our applicants in. Let's be clear so that they know collectively what to expect.
Well, to the greatest extent possible, that's absolutely true. I mean, we're not going to eliminate all controversy.
No way.
But I think we should, as much as we can all the time, to be clear.
And that was my purpose, was to try to throw the issues out so
yep.
we can be clear.
And the other thing is, it's really nice to have the application and the call and the criteria easy to work through, but remember what the purpose is. The purpose is to get the best project with the best possible outcomes. So we don't want to do it just because it's easier for the players today. So we have to be really, you know, careful about what criterion we add or take off. Okay, so have we beat that to death enough? We're going to have these items, parks and trails, food plots, on the early February meeting. I haven't heard anybody else say that they what their feelings are or interest in an area of emphasis going into this next round. I'll jump in.
We did area of emphasis, I believe, 2 years ago, and said, you know, CART, tell it, and that was a nightmare. I think part of the problem is we're doing the call so far in advance of stuff happening.
Emerging issues
that we're going to lose flexibility if we try to say, look, we're particularly interested in X this year, because by the time that actually comes up for hearing and funding, we may not be anywhere near X because we want to talk about Y, but then we've got this document in front of us that says we wanted to do X and then we get in trouble. So my personal feeling is, having gone through that once before, and it was a little on the ugly side, that we not pick out favorite things that we want to do and we keep the flexibility in the process.
See what the proposals bring us.
Right.
Concur.
And frequently the proposals will bring in something that we haven't thought of. It was this year that somebody had the reverse auction idea for easements. It's like, hey, well, that's new.
Actually, that came out about 4 years ago when the group near Collegeville had something. It was a...
Yeah, St. John's developed it, and they partnered with the Minnesota Land Trust. But what we heard this year was the results of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, which right. said, hey, this actually looks like it might be working.
And right, yeah.
Taking money and stretching it, and
right.
what a cool deal.
And that's legacy information that I'm in year four now. So something that happened 4 years ago, I wouldn't have had any knowledge about. So that's again, something that's useful stuff to leave as flexibility as new council members come and go.
Okay.
say.
Blazing right along. We're through 1, 2, and 3.
Bam.
This is very good. Item 4 is include additional questions within the proposal application related to land use / allowable uses. That's what we've been talking about also. So I think we can check that off. That's going to be
February 11th.
February 11th agenda item.
I guess if I just want to add something, that the idea behind that was just to make sure that the council has all the information that they can possibly have so that they can make the best decision possible. So, you know, like in Northwoods, for example, if there was a question in there that said, do you have trails, what's allowed, what's not allowed, then the council members can decide whether or not you want to fund it or not based on that criteria. So food plots could be the same thing. Maybe, you know, if you don't like food plots, then, and you know that here's X, Y, and Z of what kind of food plots are allowed and not allowed, then you can vote with your funding. So maybe instead of talking policy, or, you know, I guess you could go down that road, this is another option that you would do it indirectly by funding or not funding different projects. But you would at least know.
I like that idea, because when then we, as we go through and grade the projects, if something really important that we like, we can up the grade. If there's something that we really, really dislike, we can lower our scoring for that project. Mm-hmm. And I think throughout the council, we'll get the best projects for the consensus of the council that way. We'll all be judging them all on equal footing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Okay. Item 5 arose from a request from Ron. Are you still there?
Yes.
Ron, you had said that you were looking for an executive summary in the in all the applications. And really, we've got one, sort of. It's called the abstract. It's found on page 1. And maybe that word abstract is too abstract. I don't know. It's a common word used in such applications, though. And I would suggest that we all get more educated, not less. I'd rather smart it up than dumb it down. So I'm okay with calling it an abstract, but maybe we could allow a few more statistics in there, a few more characterizations that we address who, what, when, where, why, and how a little bit more, maybe another couple of sentences. But this is kind of contrary to what we did 2 years ago, because what we were really trying to do 2 years ago was cut the lard. We were trying to get rid of all this extra verbiage that, you know, when they're telling you, oh, the story of the prairie goes back to when they sod busters, and I'm like, oh, please. You know, we all know that. I don't need to hear all the history again. I want to get to what this project is about and how it's going to improve habitat.
How about if
yeah.
Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, that's, I had the same feeling, to get overwhelmed with some of those other details. And I guess my feeling about the abstract was it was insufficient, I thought. Maybe a little more clarity, and that's why I said, just tell me the who, what, where, when, why. And that will give me an idea as I then go through it as to what we're aiming for here, or what they are aiming for. And that was just, a thought.
Yeah, I think that's something staff is going to work on, if I can speak for staff, without getting too heavy. We want to keep it as brief as we can.
Do you feel you...
Well, absolutely. One thing I do is I look at how much match money are they dealing with here, and because that's more bang for the buck. So I look at that, and sometimes that's kind of just not hidden, but you could easily gloss over it. I think maybe that ought to be a little bigger, have a little bigger presence in the, just because I think it's important. And now I understand a lot of projects can't have that, but if it's a good project, fine. But there are other projects that, my gosh, we cannot afford to not fund this because they have this tremendous match that makes sense.
That's one of the 12 criteria that we currently have.
Does the council feel like they would get what they need with 100 words?
What is it, 50?
40.
It's 40.
40.
70.
100.
I'll see your 100 and 70.
I have an idea. I have found that it tends to work phenomenally well when you give somebody an example of what you want them to say. So in this part where it says abstract, provide a clear, concise summary, and then put, for example, this project will, you know, protect, enhance, acquire X number of acres, miles, for the purpose of blah, in this segment of the state, and there will be this much available in match. Give them an example. Most people are going to put that information in there, and then you've got it in one spot. And Ron's point on match is actually one I hadn't thought of until he said it. You don't know anything about the match until you get all the way over to the budget sheets. And it would be really nice for me on the front end, as you're reading the story, to have an idea in advance of, this is one with some serious bang, they've got a 20% match, or this is somebody that's got a zero. And to know that in advance, because they put it in their abstract using the example sentence that we gave them.
Yeah, a fill in the blank.
Yeah. Yeah, make it look like this, and then we're super happy because on the front page of every single proposal, we will see that one thing, and you can quick jump to it and go, oh yeah, I remember that one.
And do it within between 70 and 75 words.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah.
I give them 100.
Okay.
Does
the staff like it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all up to the proposer how they want to write it, and there is, you know, some strategy on what you include and don't include, and you only have a set amount of words, so you want to make sure that your main points are getting across. So.
Yeah, but then they have a good understanding of what we want to know, and if they put some more fluff in there, that's cool, but they'll give us what we want to know.
Susan, would you be willing to prepare a...
the example.
Thank you. Yeah,
nothing to.
That would be great. And submit it to
Amanda?
Sandy.
Or Deb.
Jane? I also, along with the abstract, you know, possibly being a little bit longer to get to the point right away, I would actually, and I know this isn't on your list, so sorry about that. Right now there's a 1,000-word limit on the design and scope of work.
Yes.
I think that's really long.
You think it's too long?
I think it's too long.
Oh, good.
I mean, I really feel like we should be able to get the meat out of it in a much more abbreviated way.
Do we have any experience of proposers that have a strong feeling about the length of that part of the application?
Or that you...
Is 500 enough?
Well, and is there a different way for us to ask the question?
Probably different ways to ask the question, but yeah, 500 in my mind would be enough. But if it, you should, you might, you want me to come down?
Yes, sure, why not? Or you could sit from there.
This is me recording, so
yeah, I think 500 probably is enough. It also will depend on, you know, some of the other questions you might ask that get to those same issues. But it's just what you guys are saying. The more you can make it clear what it is that you're really looking at in terms of the questions, the better off it is. If you just give us a big box of words, we'll fill it up.
That's true.
What do you think, David?
I think some people feel obligated to use 1,000 words. If you've given them 1,000 words, that they feel that you're expecting it. So,
right, that's true.
You know, if we can't understand 500 words, And you know what? This is all about getting it to the point where it has enough interest for us to call them in and listen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not about a final decision. So right. It's not like, if I don't squeeze in this last little fact.
It's really important that we keep that forefront in our mind, what this is for.
Mm-hmm. Jane and members, I think, and we said it in our comments, our anonymous comments that we sent in. when you like question two is a good example. When you have so many parts, or criteria two is a good example. When you have so many parts to one question, you can't fit it. You could have a thousand, you might need 1,000 words to try to explain that. But so I think simplifying it, as you guys have been talking about, with one question and one area or whatever, makes it a little bit simpler. Design and scope, you can put all sorts of stuff into it. Like Steve said, we could give us 10,000 words, give us 100 words. I don't know, but I think on some of the, that question two was one that we really struggled with because we had such
a Are you talking about criteria two?
I'm talking about criteria two, okay. I'm sorry. Evaluation criteria two that deals with the habitat, Minnesota habitat, and questions on P&E and all the rest.
Oh.
I mean, there's so much there that we had to eliminate like two or three of the...
Further down the list, we've addressed B, C, and D there. I continue, as we did 2 years ago, to question what historical value to fish and wildlife, where that originates, and how that results in a better, preferable project.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you a little bit.
Because it was something that was there right from the very beginning, I think.
It was whether or not this is property that's been restored or property that's native.
Why didn't we say that?
I have no clue why we don't say that, but that's the history, as my recollection is. It's really about whether or not this is native prairie that's never been broken, or is it restored prairie that we want to do. And that's the historical validity of it.
Well, that's a bad way to phrase it then, isn't it?
Pretty horrid.
Hey, you know what? A lot of this criteria happened, you know, very quickly.
Before you even had an application.
I mean, you know, we literally, the bill passed and we had to have recommendations within several months.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you invented the wheel, it had some bumps in it.
It had some bumps.
Well,
this is one of those bumps.
Yeah, this is why we're here. We can tighten it up or eliminate it or reword it or whatever we think is more appropriate today.
Absolutely.
And that actually makes a lot more sense because I've always wondered what the hell that meant. Well,
I got different answers from some of the earlier guys around the council as to what that meant.
Jane, my point on the limits on each section.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was just using two as an example.
Right.
But so when you read on the RFP what you're supposed to talk about in design and scope, I mean, there's a lot there. And so, like Steve said, is that you fill it up at 1,000 or it's 500, okay, whatever. So I was just trying to say is that, as was earlier talking about how the staff is going to try to, you know, align, you know, the cross-reference stuff and everything, because design and scope, as you read it, could be used for a number of the criteria.
Sure.
And so, again, it just gets a little bit, you're afraid that, well, if I don't answer this question just this way, then criteria number 9 might not, and I'm just making, number 9 might not be fully explained that. So that was just the cross-referencing and the question to the criteria would be really beneficial, I think, because then we'd only need 100 words per question or something or whatever, however
find out more once you've done that correspondence exercise.
Well, and I think to your point, we're getting double information frequently because it shows up in this part and it shows up in the other part.
That'd be nice to slim that down.
Just having it in, you know, one, and if it's shorter, easier questions that each relate to design and scope as a suburb, you know, like this is the design and scope section. Here's our short, easy questions. Answer these instead of blah.
Yeah. I think if we just ask specifically for what we're looking for, design and scope, I mean, people could be going back to, you know, the 1800s.
And they do.
And we just really want to know what they're trying to do with this project.
Yeah. I like it.
Yes. Okay. What do you think about deleting criterion number 8, which is...
Oh, they have to make the statute?
Yes.
To clarify that as being that would be deleting it from the scorable...
deleting it from the evaluation criteria.
From
it's
the
not
evaluation
a criteria.
Because it's required by statute.
It's not a criterion.
And it's required by the...
If the basic eligibility question.
Right. It should be a check the box you check.
Yeah.
If you don't check the box, then the application's void.
Yeah. But we should be scoring them on
that. Screening questions.
Yeah, but the question is who makes that decision? And that's why it was originally there for everyone to weigh in on, because, you know, Mark reading it, if you give staff the responsibility to say meets or doesn't meet, what if their read of it is different than the council's? And what if your read is different than my read? The real purpose of that, I think, is if there's someone who feels that it is a problem, they're raising their hand. It may not be you get a 3 or a 6 or something else, but there's, you know, you might read a proposal, Sue, and say, wait a second, this one misses the mark and everyone else misses it. But you've created a situation where we all have to then think about it at least a little bit. And that was the purpose of having it there, was not to make any one person responsible for that pass fail, but to let us all have that view and then share the view.
Well, so
we might not do it right.
But 8, according to this, and I'm not even seeing 9 show up on our blue sheets, which is interesting, but 8 is permanent protection. Will we be acquiring it free of other permanent protection? Oh, interesting. It shows up in a couple places. Is the activity on permanently protected land, you know, so those are yes or no questions. And we have to assume that they answer the question correctly. And if the answer is no, we're not going to follow the statute, then we shouldn't be looking at it. And if the answer is yes, we're going to follow the statute, we have to rely on them that they are. We can't say you will really rely or you'll just rely a little bit. It doesn't make sense to have that be a scored criteria when it is simply a gatekeeper function, the same way, is it over $400,000 or not?
See, that's exactly the discussion I had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But we were not successful in removing it from the list of criteria. And I don't think it should be a criteria. It's a thumbs up or down qualifier.
Yeah.
So everybody agrees the question is
very important.
Valid. It's just whether the scoring should be attached to that question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a no-brainer. Without it, it's an invalid application.
Could we say in the text of the request, describe how your proposal meets the applicable criteria of 9?
Oh, you just get a bunch of emails.
Well, look at more.
Can I just point out that on page 5, we asked the question, so maybe we should be looking at revising that question.
Where are we?
Page 5
of the blue sheet, it says applicable criteria. That's who we asked the question.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to revise that question.
It's on 5 and 6, according to the green things.
The thing to remember with this blue sheet is all options that could apply to programs are printed off on here. So
okay.
If your program is only a restore program, you're not going to see all of this.
Right. And that's why
we tried to note some of that out.
Okay.
Can we maybe think about it a little bit differently and possibly just have, you know, all of the criteria listed in the application and have a sign-off that says, by signing this, I acknowledge that I have read and am in compliance with all of the requirements of this funding.
Yeah, and that's what that's a great way to do it. I certify that blah, 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 just like we do with everything else in the universe, and then we rely on that. If they didn't, then they're in a breach. I think it's 7 and 8, not 8 and 9.
It is, but this is an error.
Okay, because I couldn't find 8 or 9, and then I suddenly
it's
realized
eight,
that we had
7. It's 8 and 9, though, I think.
It's 7 and
criteria
8.
Criteria 7 in the blue sheet. Should
this
be
is wrong, I think. I think this is right. It's okay. 8 and 9.
The blue sheet's wrong.
Right.
And then what's 7?
Does the proposal describe how the program's outcomes are maintained?
Bottom of page 4.
It's on page 3 of the call. Evaluation criteria.
It's an example why everything sucks.
Well, that's why we're here.
I know. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
So, Julie, could you put together an example like that to submit to staff for them to perfect?
Sure.
That would be awesome.
Everything I've ever done.
Yeah.
I certify I'm in compliance.
Well,
I just did a W-9 for this.
I just or nine to my public officials form thing yesterday, and it was by clicking this box, I submit blah 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 blah.
You
click okay.
You read them, huh? Wow.
I had to do it yesterday.
Oh wow.
You have to do it by the 25th.
I know.
But that's all it is. Yeah, and if you don't click the box, then you don't get to keep going.
Does that make you happy?
A little.
Certainly it makes me happy. I think the real question is what happens if a member of our staff or one of us has a serious question about the constitutional applicability of a project. And how do we
Remember
handle
comments.
That?
Comments.
And I'm fine. I don't have any.
Yeah.
But the purpose is, you know, we have a responsibility. The responsibility is to recommend projects that meet the constitutional requirements.
The only place I ever put that is over in the comments where I say it doesn't meet the constitutional mandate.
And
zero.
Because
you know,
we've had a few of those.
We've had a few
not
of them.
Not every year we do. Last year we had several of them.
And you know, my only response to putting it in the comments is we have not done a very good job of taking member comments and figuring out how to incorporate that into our discussion.
And that's further down the list than phase two or three, and I agree.
And so as long as you sort of key that issue in mm-hmm. and a member
right.
has the ability, or staff for that matter. I mean, mm-hmm. this should not be... You know, Sandy, in reading a proposal, ought to raise her hand if she has a concern and say, wait a second, you need to think about this.
Well, there could be, you know, when we do the compilation of all the criteria into the matrix that you prepare that shows, you know, Olson, Wilkins, Hartwell, Shara, and they have all the criteria listed across, and it's, you know, five or two or three or whatever all the way. There could be a box there where we've asked the question, is this constitutional or not?
Well, but we've got that anyway. You know, when we get to the meeting where we're doing the selection of who's going to be heard,
yeah,
that's when we're discussing it.
Yeah.
Every year, that's been when we discuss it, and
yeah.
we discuss it whether or not comments were made.
Right.
So,
but I mean, that would make it something that everybody has to answer for every project. Not just if you're paying attention.
But
or not.
You'd have that for every project, for every single criteria. You'd have, do you have a concern about this?
I agree.
It's simply, to me, it is just a gatekeeper function. They have to say that it is this way. If we don't agree, we're talking about it in the meeting where we decide whether or not we hear them. I don't think there's any added value in making another box or a scoring criteria for something that's a gatekeeper.
Agree?
Yep, that's exactly what I was going to say, Sue.
Okay, we should be doing our jobs and bringing it up at some point.
Right, because that is
done. Yeah.
So can I just clarify that the attestment statement that Julie's going to work on, did you want that for all of the requirements in 97.8.056, and then did you want them each spelled out?
At the top of the application. So if they can't fill that out in the affirmative...
Maybe that should go right under the constitutional amendment.
They shouldn't go on any further.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that should be right under the constitutional amendment.
I have read and agreed to the terms of the statute or something, just like what Julie said and what
mm-hmm.
Jane said, that you have to click on the things to go forward anyway.
Yeah,
I was writing, you know, that there's a criteria box that says, I acknowledge that I have read and certified that this proposal meets all requirements.
I don't want to list them all. I think you can hot link to the to the statute.
Right.
And I think that's already
you want
in there.
One attestment
and I think it is
for
there.
The entire statute.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we're still going to put it in the proposal because that's that they've answered yes or no.
Well, if they answer no, then they should be cut off from continuing the application.
Right. Yeah. You're saying if you have it in paper, it covers us.
So you're saying when we get the thing in our binder,
yeah,
it will say applicant has certified that blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So it just becomes a statement that prints out.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's just, I don't want to be silly about this, but someone clicks yes in their line.
They do that already. What difference does it make?
That's my question.
Yeah?
They submit a proposal, and they say it meets the constitutional requirements and all, you know, and it doesn't.
That's our job to look at it and say it does or it doesn't, but that's not a scorer.
Do we really care that they've attested that it meets the requirements?
Yes.
I think what we're trying to do is get it off of a rating criteria, but still make sure that they understand that this is a requirement.
Okay, so
And I don't think it changes anything else.
It's them saying, I believe I am,
right,
but we don't have to believe it. It's just a way of getting them to think about it.
Right, it's nothing different.
And I'm okay with that. I just,
yeah,
because
yeah,
everybody who sends a proposal in is thinking that it meets the requirement.
Yeah.
So it's almost like,
so it's not any different than yesterday if we do it this way.
So we'll go into this criterion.
Is, do you care that they?
Yes.
Yes.
I want them to know that. I want them to make sure. I want, you know,
I only ask,
click on it and read the dang language.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
You said a lot of people. You're
a contrary of law.
Do you agree with taking it off the criteria list?
Yes.
And inserting it up close to the top of the application as a checkoff?
Yes.
I read and then certify.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think you could do a similar certify on the criteria 9, which is the is it permanent land or whatever. I think that's that particular certification statement looks a little different because it's a little more, but
yeah,
you, again, as a gatekeeper function, we question them on it whether we think it's right or not, but they should be certifying that it does because it has to.
That's included in the 97A, so that was my question.
Oh,
you so, was yeah, do you want me to address every single thing in 97A?
No. You want an extra?
That's an issue that gets overlooked sometimes, and I think there's a value to asking, is this land already protected? It's different than, does it meet the constitutional and other requirements?
So you're thinking like easements that are like a CRP?
Yeah.
Something.
I mean,
okay.
That's where we
it's a
need
finer
to be
distinction,
careful.
But it's important.
Yeah.
So, is this land already protected under
permanently
protected under some other program? And if so, what is it? Which could just be a yes, no, and a box of the what is it? But permanently would exclude a 20-year
CRP.
Yeah. And that's something we still want to know.
Right. Yeah, I would want to know whether or not it's permanently or temporarily, so because it affects the price.
Yep, mm-hmm. Exactly.
I want to know if it's got protection and whether we're duplicating it, because there's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
We do not want to spend this money
double pay.
We don't want to double pay.
We can better spend money on something that's not protected at all than spending a cheaper money on something that isn't protected.
Yeah, there's a lot of property out there that has a conservation easement, and it's not maybe the perfect conservation easement. But I would argue we're better off protecting property that has no conservation easement than making one that is there a bit stronger.
So as you're scoring these projects, one scores higher than the other.
Well, and
probably
and
still good, well, good project, but it might be.
And similarly, if the answer is yes, there's temporary or permanent protection on here, if so, what? There's a CRP easement that expires in 2 years. Yeah, we're interested because it's about to go out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I just want to remind council members that in the past, when project managers have come to us with easements that have protection on it, that's always come before the council for approval and review. We would just never blankly approve something like that without it being reviewed by you.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to perpetuate that. That's a good thing.
But changing the way that question is done.
was. So do you want to leave that as a criteria? And just word it differently?
I think it's worded differently with the is it or is it not, and then if so, what? You know, explain exactly what is that protection and how long does it last.
Do you want that as a scoreable criteria, though, or do you want it just as a question that asks more information?
I think it's an information question.
What, Steve?
Yeah, I would just say that there are going to be times when there's a parcel where there's an easement, maybe only a portion of it, and it makes sense that you're going to want to buy the whole thing and certainly discount it for the value of that easement that's already on.
Well, then that needs to be laid out.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you're going to want people, I think, to explain, here's the deal. Here's why this makes ecological sense to buy the whole thing, even though there happens to be a permanent easement on a portion of it or whatever that's doing that's not satisfying what we need to do for conservation.
Well, we just did that with the trout access. We just approved that, you know.
Because it turned out that what the protection was irrelevant to what the value was.
It was an easement, but not in the sense that we apply easement.
Right. Yeah, so then the question becomes, is all or any portion of the projected or the proposed project subject to a temporary or permanent easement? If yes, explain.
Is all or any portion of the proposed...
And that's for acquisition.
Parcel.
For restoration, our requirement has been we're not going to pay for restoration unless there is permanent protection on the property. Because why do we want to pay for something that's going to go away?
Restoration.
So the question would pop up if it's an acquisition, but the question wouldn't show if it was not an acquisition. Is that what you're saying?
There's a different question.
Okay.
If it's asked on any property that's going to have restoration activity, is it covered with permanent protection, either ownership or easement?
Got it.
The question's asked for
both. Right.
Who's responsible for writing those up?
I'll take that one.
Good. Both of them, right?
Yes.
All right. Which one is that? That's 9. Or that's 7 on our list.
7 on your list?
Number 1 in your hearts.
All right.
Am I catching this wrong, or is that a question already asked, basically?
It is already asked on page 5. You'll see permanent protection is asked, and it's listed on there twice. The fee proposals were answered, easement proposals were answered. That's...
And it's a, yeah. It's
but they're not... I don't think the questions are right.
So you write that up. And I work with Sandy?
Yeah. Both of us.
Holy smokes. How long do you want to work today?
Afternoon already?
Yeah.
I need a sandwich or something sometime. Either break and come back.
Would you agree to take a break now and then come back and work till like 1:30? Work for another hour?
That works for me.
A quick break instead of a full hour.
A 20-minute break?
A quick break because I'm going to lunch after this.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
I'm going with my cousin. My little cousin.
But she didn't invite all?
Jeez.
You can come with me to the wet paint art store in Grand Avenue and see my cousin and tag along for lunch if you want.
Okay. Well, let's take a 20-minute break and come back and work 1:30 or until we get through phase one. Because we're already doing really well, I think. We've got a lot done already.
And I love...
So this would be... You'll see as you track down this worksheet that there are some subjects that are repeated, one under application and another same subject under criteria. I think the reason I did it that way is because, first of all, it's information that we should have at least, and so I think it ought to be in the application. And then once if we decide it should be in the application, what follows is the discussion on whether there should be a criterion to match up with it, and then later on how much it should be worth in scoring. That's sort of how I triage these subject lines. So we've talked about scalability a lot of times, and in the last round, after everything was in, I know that Mark had recontacted all the project managers to confirm whether these projects were all or nothing or not. And, you know, I thought I knew the answer to it, which turned out to be the case, that there was only one that was either an all or nothing. But I think it is important that we get that out up front. And I'm really hoping what it'll do is start ratcheting down some of the padded requests.
Yeah.
And I you know, I think maybe some of them are padded and some of them aren't, but I'm going to try, you know, to introduce language that helps to keep things on a realistic scale. You know, what is you know, if you have $20 million worth of projects teed up and ready to go, so be it. But if it's really nine, then we should be looking at nine.
So would this also, if we used something like that, would it also give the opportunity for that project manager to do sort of come in from the other angle? They say, okay, we've got a $700,000 project, here's what we're going to do, but it's also scalable. If you'll give us $1 million, we'll be able to do this, even though they come in at $700,000.
Well, our policy has never been to give more than they ask for.
Yeah.
We never do that.
So we wouldn't scale up. But to be able to scale down.
I think we leave ourselves open when, you know, they apply for $10 million and it has a, I'm just going to use an example, an 8% overhead factor.
Okay.
And then, you know, we give them $3 million because that's what we think is right. And it has a 14% overhead because we're cutting them down and then they get to come back and tell us the way it is. If we actually ask them, tell us what your deliverables would be at three different points of money, they have to think about it ahead of time.
Yeah, and you're addressing the second question in this line that, you know, first of all, should we get them to answer and address scalability? And B, if so, lay it out in the budget.
Absolutely.
You know, what a 50% haircut would be.
Because we know.
Or whatever.
There's nothing wrong with people asking for what they think they can spend. We also know very few are going to get that.
Right.
So let's understand the consequences of not getting it.
Right.
We wouldn't do this part of the project. We'd spend this much on administrative costs, whatever those components are. We don't need, you know, gory detail, but we need to know. It makes a difference to me if someone's, you know, going to take their overhead from 4% to 20%.
And eight, nine, and 10 are sort of a like subject. They all speak to that. And that's why I think it's important that we get it into the application. And then talk about whether we should have criteria attached to them. Because these are subjects that come up every time on every project, really. It's coming up more and more.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember the discussion we had out in Wilmer about, you know, why is your budget this, when they came back and we weren't providing as much money as they wanted. And how could we say yes or no at that point?
Right.
The administrative costs went up. Well, that's because that's the way it is.
Well, and I accept that to a certain extent. There is economy of scale.
I absolutely accept
it.
But I'd rather know
up front. Right.
Yeah. Well, and especially when it's a big drop. Let's say they asked for four and we gave them one, but they still have the same engineering costs and everything else, and then you end up with four times as much because, well, then did it make sense to do that for us to give us the
Then we can have
one.
That discussion.
Yeah, then we can
on the front end.
Yeah.
Right, on the front end instead of after the commitment has been made.
And you know, the other thing that I want to make sure we don't lose sight of, that we're not coming across as beating up the proposers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to encourage the proposals, but by being clear from the very beginning, it's being fair, you know, as opposed mm-hmm. to them having them come in and after the fact say, well, why did you do it like this? Yeah. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't want to discourage proposers, and I'm sure that there are legitimate reasons for all of the numbers that are assigned and laid out in a proposal. I'm sure they're not just swags, you know.
Right.
So sort of an implementation question on that. I mean, I've applied to council 3 times, so I'm starting to get the process. Would this look like, would you actually submit alternative budgets? Because there's a fair amount of work and review that goes into those budgets and organizations. We can do that, but that's a, I think,
I
especially
think
it's more organizations.
Budgets. I think we want, call it a percentage change. If you're going to get, half of the money that you propose, how would your percentage of expenditure change?
But for them to come up with that reason, you all almost have to work through a bunch of lines of data.
I'm not sure we're going about this the right way. If we're going to change, if we're the ones that are changing, you know, a recommendation, if they propose 4, we're giving them 1, I'm actually way more concerned about the outcomes. How does that change their outcomes? I mean, what they're doing for, you know, their costs and administration is one thing, but are we still going to, I mean, and maybe we should say we don't want to see any more than X percentage, even at any scale of what their overhead costs are, but what does it mean for their outcomes? Because if it gets to a point where we wouldn't rank them anymore, that's a big deal, you know? And I don't want us to get fixated on that, and I don't want people to have to prepare 3 budgets. To me, it is about how well that dollar is being spent.
That's right.
You're absolutely right. You know, the outcomes that we focus on the administrative cost because that's where the changes seem to take place. But the question is, what's the outcome?
But I don't know. It seems like quite an exercise to put everybody through before we've gone through any of the reviewer ranking.
Well, there's nothing wrong with asking, is this a scalable project?
There's nothing wrong with that. I absolutely 100% agree with you.
But you know what? I don't think you need to ask that question to understand it and know the answer. If you read the project, you know the answer.
Well, and that actually, this conversation takes me to a my complete puzzlement the first year that we did this. I had some experience on the CPL side with our Pheasants Forever chapter and some people that I knew in other wildlife organizations in my county, you know, applying for a CPL grant and getting it. They got what they asked for. So I come here and I like ranked my top things that first year and I said, okay, this is the dollar amount, and I did full fund, okay, spent my money. And then some things like RIM, you know, that you can do pieces, because even I knew that first year. And then I come here, and nobody gets full funded. And do we do it that way because we've always done it that way, or do we do it that way because we specifically thought about, let's not fully fund anybody and make everybody cram?
Can
we do really good projects with really good outcomes?
And that goes to some of the comments that I've made in the past that are on the same vein. It's like, are we sprinkling goodwill so that everybody gets a little taste, which I'm not interested in.
No.
But I think if we do them by ecoregion, that'll help tamp that down.
Well,
if we compare within ecoregions, I think that'll have an effect too.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's pros and cons to all of that. I mean, I, you know, the thing that I worry about with ecoregions is that it is actually more sprinkling. I want to take the best of the best, wherever it is. Wherever it is in the state. I mean, I'm just not sure how I feel about that. Because if something, if we were to rate things, you know, each project have their own, you know, like, criteria or pool,
a slice of the pie,
we might be funding a program in one area of the state that wouldn't have ranked as high.
Yeah, like a forest, because it was the best of the forest, but it's not as good as the worst of the prairie.
Right.
Yeah. I see where you're going.
I'm not feeling good about that.
If we provide the money in advance, we would never do the huge easement we did up in northern Minnesota that was a $30 million project. And that would be unfortunate. We need to be able to say, whoa, this is really cool, and we ought to put a big chunk of our money in southwestern Minnesota this year because the opportunity is so unique.
Right. You know, the other thing about that, I mean, I've written and received a lot of grants in my life, and most of them have been exactly for what I asked for.
Yes.
But a lot of those were kind of project-based rather than programmatically driven. But it's, I mean, what we've done is we've created a bit of a monster here because, you know, this pitching bigger and bigger amounts of money because they know we're going to, you know, fractionize it. And how do we make it real at this point?
Do you guys mind if you all come down here?
I mean, you might as well just, there's plenty of chairs.
Sure, do we get to sit at the grown-up table? Is that for you?
Come on, kids.
I don't get to do this at Thanksgiving.
Well, and Julie and Barry, on your first run-through, did you find it odd that nothing got fully funded? That we were just chunking stuff out? Or did you already expect that because you'd seen it before?
Well, I had already seen it before, but...
And I've been through appropriation process at the legislature for 20 years.
So you'd seen it too.
And I represented a county board that did similar, which is another legislative body that does similar things.
But it's frustrating, you know, because it's frustrating as a reviewer. It's frustrating to put in because, you know, as a proposer, because you don't know what's going to happen. And you're playing a bit of roulette, you know, like, okay, if I only ask for $10 million because I'm really being authentic, that I only actually need $10 million, are they going to slice it? And so it's questionable from a proposer standpoint, like, how am I going to throw the dice this way, you know, this time? What are they going to do with it? But it's frustrating sitting here reading, like, well, what do they really want? Because we've set up this system of fractionizing it.
Yeah, the expectation is going to be cut, because... You know, like this one that we just...
Yeah.
And it was funny. It's like I was looking at the pictures going, I've seen these pictures. And I realized that I'd sat through the presentation at Maud. I was like, oh, that's why I've seen these pictures. But something like this. I mean, this is a project, not a program.
Right.
And maybe the question isn't so much, is this scalable? The question is this a specific one deal project?
Is this a one-timer?
Or is this part of a long-term plan that would be considered a program?
But can't you tell that by reading the application?
Not when you're brand new, you can't.
And that might be, you know, making that distinction, because I think that's for us, that's a problem too. I mean, there are one-offs that might be big deals like the blind easement that is really important, and then there are programs, and sometimes it's hard to compare those as kind
of
apples
to
apples.
Why don't we ask them, is this one and done?
I think making it clear that there's a kind of a pathway that's acceptable. So I think we interpret what's going on as you kind of want to give the programs, and there are projects within those programs, but that's the preference of the council, and so there's perhaps some hesitation to want to propose it, but it's not in the context of the program.
Devil's advocate or flip side to that, I think there's even a higher level of expectation on the programs, and I'm even more critical of the programs. That is not a blank check every year. And if they're not meeting their reporting requirements, or if they're only completing X amount, you know, this percent of what they've always asked for, those are the things that I'm looking at. Because you can tell, you know, they got this much done this year with this much money. You can start tracking that stuff. And we're in a way different position than we were when it all started.
So you're talking about the phase 4, 5, 6.
Absolutely. And they shouldn't come in here thinking that this is a guarantee.
Some
there could be something
folks
else.
That are coming in, they know of opportunities. Someone's coming to them, 4 or 5 different individuals that want them to acquire their property.
Right.
And once the word gets out. Yeah.
Yep. And so they come forth with a proposal, and we can't buy all 5, but we could buy 1 this year or maybe 2 this year. And so they keep working at this list, and it maybe looks like a program, but they really, it's an opportunity that they've had for some time.
Yep.
And well, that ties into how we want to rank their parcels, too.
The challenge with the project, the one-off project, is it's an all-or-nothing deal.
Right.
You know, and those of us that have spent any time trying to protect land know that there are a whole bunch of things that sometimes get in your way of doing the best projects. You know, you
you're dealing with people who are making decisions which you cannot control. And so a program gives you the flexibility to go from the one you really wanted to do to the one you wanted to do, not quite as much, but almost as much, and not tie up the resources of the amendment waiting for the shoe to drop.
And that's why we should prioritize parcels or at least understand their process.
Mm-hmm. But I heard project and program, that's the difference.
Yeah.
Project
yeah.
is really yeah. a one-off deal.
Right.
And program is a whole bunch of one-off deals.
Right.
Which are all within a universe.
But with that context, is there an actual thought-out reason why the ones that are a specific project are always not fully funded? Or have we just always done it that way?
Well,
because the program, you know, we're going to ask for, I'm Pheasants Forever today, I'm going to ask for 18, I could spend 18, but I can spend 5, and I can spend 2, and I can spend 10, you know, that's program stuff. But I'm talking about project-wise, why do we come in with, we're not going to give you all of that when they've come in with something that says, we're going to do this for this much money, and then we say, oh, that's nice, but we're not going to give you that. When
so,
any other grant proposal they're doing, like even at the CPL level, they do get what they request if the project is approved. Why do we do it that way?
Well, I will tell you part of my rationale is that people ought to go find other money.
But some of these are coming in with the match. They're coming in with... We've got
some
20% match,
are.
But we need 2 million.
Sandy has been waiting patiently.
Well, I think it's a function of how the council process is for filling out the money.
Mm-hmm.
You get a result, and that's based on that process.
Well, I can tell you why I don't give everything that I have to one project or another. One of the reasons is that there are different entities, and landowners respond to different entities differently. I remember talking to Joe Pavelko when we were out in southwestern Minnesota and saying, this is so damn confusing to me because there's PF out here, there's DNR, there's Bowser, there's all of these rim, not rim, all of this stuff. And he said, but we all know what we're all doing, and this farmer here will not sell to DNR, but they will sell to me. So part of the reason that I don't give it all to one, or even a couple of them, is because they're all moving ahead, you know, in a mob, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
They're all moving ahead. And do I think this one has the best percentage? Yeah, and that's why I give them the most.
Right, but
that's what I think.
We're penalizing projects.
Oh, I don't. If it's a project that meets the constitutional, you know...
But they start out with the chair proposal each year has been...
Well, did you give Marsh Lake everything they asked for this year?
I don't remember what I gave anybody.
Well, I mean, that was an all-or-nothing. There aren't that many all-or-nothing.
But they came in later and said it was all-or-nothing.
I knew that by reading it.
Yeah. If you go back and look at my proposed allocations, even after I realized the first year that they didn't do it that way, I still do 100% on projects, and I do a scale on programs. But we treat them all the same when we give out the money.
So, Sandy, help us on a historic basis of the folks that have come in on a project and ask for, you know, a specific amount that's an all-or-nothing deal. How many have come back like Marsh Lake and said, you didn't give us all, we can't do the project, or somehow have scaled the project or found money somewhere else?
Less than a handful. It's a very small amount.
You know, when you're,
like
when you're trying to find money...
They didn't.
You've got to go find it in many different sources sometimes. And it's our choice whether to give it all or to give part of it and let them piece it together because, you know, we're going to do in our head, you're going to do it differently than I am, but we're going to do the, God, I want to make sure we fund this project with this much and that project can get by with a little less and this project I don't like and we come to some sort of a collaborative
equilibrium. I see that, but we don't get the same outcomes when we cut every single thing without regard to whether it's a standalone project, or part of an ongoing program that's been happening for 6 years. We don't have the same outcomes. We can't. We don't get the same quality by just saying everybody gets 70% if you're on the list. And I understand that that hint has come out okay. Does that mean that we need to do it the same every year? No. Is there maybe a different way to do it? Yes. I'm saying let's have a conversation about why in the hell do we do it this way? Because I don't think when you look at CPL grants or some of the other funds out there, when you put in a grant proposal and you get the whole thing and you do your whole project, why is that less good than getting 70% and doing maybe 60% of your project? I don't understand that.
I would think it is less good. Would we get better proposals if we either funded them or not? Fund the whole project or not? First year we wouldn't, but with the subsequent years, would we get better, tighter proposals if we either funded the entire project or we funded nothing?
I wonder if an NGO came in and asked for $18 million, if they got the full $18 million, they might not come back for a couple years.
Or more.
Or they're going to keep coming back.
But if you get $4 million a year for 4 years, then you keep coming back.
Yeah.
What do you guys say?
If it was all or none?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, there are certainly, I think go back to the first year that we did this, that's a little bit different than how we do it now. There is an expectation now that is not a surprise only to anybody, where we're banking on or betting on, based on what's happened, if we ask for 10, we're going to get 7 or 5. Everyone's building that into their proposal, because
yeah.
That's what's been going on.
Right. Yeah.
So So I think when this first started, part of it was also that, we were doing more internal vetting with ourselves in terms of projects.
In other associate groups.
Yeah, when I say we, I'm talking about the NGO and working with DNR. The way it kind of started was getting in the room and thinking about, okay, who's working on what and what kind of proposals can we put together? And what are we going to kind of float up? We kind of work the same way that, if you're familiar with the way the joint ventures work, it kind of worked the same way that first year or so. And they kind of got away from that. It kind of got into individual organizations putting in their programmatic ask, and now we're on phase 87 or phase 88 or whatever it is.
It's only
25
years.
Yeah, yeah. I think... it would put a lot of shock in the system, honestly, if you kind of just said, okay, we're going to just do this kind of all or none approach. But I think, to me, it gets back to, for you guys and for us working together to have much greater clarity about what we want in terms of conservation outcomes out of all this. I think we've all kind of collectively gotten to this point where I'm not sure, we use acres as kind of a surrogate for conservation outcomes, but I'm not sure that necessarily is really the best measure. And we're sophisticated enough collectively to be able to figure out.
So what other parameters should there be that would be pure enough to be a real communicator? Because populations alone aren't.
Right.
Of plants or flora or fauna. There are too many variables in nature for that to be a direct correlation in the short window that we have. This is a blink. What other parameters are legitimate?
Well, I think when you're asking us, and I think you've got some of that in here, when you're asking us to demonstrate how what we're doing is connected to other sites, how there is, I'm just thinking kind of basic conservation biology principles of how we're kind of trying to chunk things up and looking at how this particular acquisition complements other stuff that's already happened. That's where you can kind of cover your bet that acres can be a pretty good surrogate for we're going to have good populations of plants and animals that's really what we're after. We don't really care. At the end of the day, we actually don't really care about acres so much as it is about what are we getting off the acres.
Well, down in C, I have adds to existing contiguous protected tracts and or provides corridor link.
Yeah.
Now, that's an outcome more of a leveraged
It's landscape scale versus.
Yeah.
Right. And I think make us demonstrate that to you guys and how we're doing that. You know, and we really, I don't think collectively we really had to do that so much. I mean, the maps that we give and the parcels that we give, we talk about it, but does it really, I don't think it does a great job of really explaining how it's connected.
When we started listening to some of these Red River Valley, what they're really flood control initially projects, you know, restoring stream, you know, meandering, right. We had all these little tiny bits, subsections of watersheds, and I said, I want to see the larger watershed and what part of this that is. And so, you know, when we get the map that we get at the end of our applications, the Minnesota map, it's broken out by county, and there's an X on it.
Yeah.
That's bum one. That's bum one.
Yeah. Bum one.
Yeah.
Highly technical term.
That's an architectural term.
Bum one?
Yeah. Landscape architectural term. So, I don't know. I get a lot out of scale and graphic layout of what it is you're doing on a landscape.
Mm-hmm. What about you guys over there, being really quiet, looking concerned?
I'm a conservation planner, so I'm listening to this and think, how do we do this? You know, and it's really hard to measure that stuff.
Yeah.
I know I go back to the very start of this council through the 25-year framework.
Right.
I know I've actually read that a couple times. And I know when I'm working on a proposal, I'm trying to think how it relates to that, but I'm not sure if there's a way to clearly communicate that. Maybe more guidance council could give us.
Maybe could we come up, brainstorm with all kinds of parameters that could be relevant?
These are things that they want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All kinds of parameters.
There's good biological models out there, which I honestly didn't know about until this year, where I was looking at what's called a thunderstorm map for duck pairs. Well, what I was thinking was, oh, this is where the ducks are, and this is great. But there's models that Habitat does at Fish and Wildlife Service where they can model, if you restore this site, here's what the increase would be in duck pairs that are nested. And I didn't even know that existed. So that would be a really good, if I spend my money here, what is my return on that benefit?
I would love to see some presentations on that.
Joker. Yeah, I think we have to be somewhat careful to be focused on these species, though, because we're not doing species work.
Right.
You know, and because it's good for ducks isn't rationale to do the project.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is.
Well, it may be a piece of it.
Well, then we wouldn't have done the pheasant plan either. I mean, it's that whole thing, like, if it's good for one species, it's good for a whole,
well,
you know,
and that becomes my concern with food plots is this is a species-oriented versus a habitat-oriented, which is good for the butterflies and the amphibians and the pheasants and...
the best duck project we did was a pheasant project, I think.
You know, so... But, I guess my concern is if we focus on a species, we're not telling the whole story of what we're trying to do.
All right. I want to kind of get back because we've gotten onto several really big and important subjects, and I want to try to check off.
Julie's got this look on her face.
I know.
There's an idea bulb over her head.
Let me just finish. I want to get back to breaking out items because we get off track too easily otherwise.
I just want to say that I think there's lots of ways that things can be measured. Acres is a proxy, and it's a widget. And I think that there are lots of ways to, and I actually, my master's is in forest biology. I know a thing or two about this, but, you know, even if you talked about, you know, measures, I mean, the long-term outcomes, I'm looking at healthy, resilient ecosystems. Well, that means something about the number of species present, the abundance of species present, whether or not they are obligatory, whether or not are they transient species, are they, there's a lot of different things we can do. And for me, when I read all of these proposals, and I believe that the outcomes that we're asking for need to be bumped way up in the proposal.
It's at the very end. It's at the end.
And we're already asking them how do they maintain their outcomes when we haven't even learned their outcomes yet. And the outcomes are the important thing.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Yeah. I want to hear what the heck they're doing there. And not about, you know, miles of boundary gone. What does that mean? What does that mean? That's a measure of something, but it's not a measure of a habitat outcome.
Yeah.
In your proposal, you ask for information that might help you figure out what you should be asking. Because you ask them, what are the conservation plans you use in your effect?
Right.
So we use it for a preferred plan and another tall grass.
And I skip over that because I'm like, blah, blah, blah.
You could have, and that's where you could say, this is what this project should be measured against, is what's its accomplishments and the scientific plans and set it was based on.
Right.
There's a little more work on the organizations to do that, but that's your prerogative to ask for that.
But, Moving the outcomes to the front was something I was actually thinking of. And what we see in outcomes, and I just pulled out one of the ones that we've got a final of here, but what we see in outcomes is tiny. It's way smaller than the design and scope, but what we care about is the outcome.
Right.
So if we do this and say, you know, here's the little executive summary abstract, these are the outcomes we're going to have.
Here's how we make
it happen. And then here's how we're going to make it happen.
That's right. Yep.
And be more, and I think we need to give more of a, this is what we want to know about your outcome. Maybe example-based, you know, if you're doing this kind of thing, what things are you going to get out of it instead of these things that are thrown in at the end that almost have no meaning. Some of the outcomes I've seen have been two sentences.
Oh,
so Joe was the patient we're waiting too.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to hear what staff has to say.
I was just going
to
say that interestingly that you bring this subject up because staff has actually been meeting with Region 4, the Region 3 Fish and Wildlife Service, the Happen office, to talk about this exact thing with modeling and trying to develop models for LASARD that we could utilize to come up with some sort of indicator species or something that could put numbers, you know, number of ducks, number of pheasants, number of whatever, butterflies, bobolinks, something like that, wildlife related. And then we've also been meeting with Bowser to talk about their modeling that they have. They've developed a PTM app, which is Houston Engineering. It's almost like a thing that...
How come we don't know about this?
Because we've been looking
at
it to
see if it's possible. You guys should be talking to us more about what's going on in the office. And I'm not kidding. You really do work for us, and having outreach that we don't know about and not participate in, that kind of torques me right off, because it's our job.
That's not micromanaging.
Well, I guess I respectfully disagree.
Right.
I think there should be more participation.
They can go out and find information.
Well, it should be presented to us as to what it could be in the executive director's report, if nothing else.
Yeah, transparency. Hello.
We need to know what's going on. We meet enough.
Can I belay your fears just a little bit? Because what we found out so far isn't any. We've just been kind of investigating whether this is possible.
So tell us what you're investigating. Talk about what you guys think is important. We don't have the answers for everything, that's for sure.
We figured we were still probably about a month off from coming back to you with some type of a summary of what we think might be able to happen. But the other thing is that even these investigations, if it gets to go anywhere, it's going to take money. I mean, that's the other thing we're trying to figure out, is not just is it possible, but what's money and go, what's
well,
the
yeah.
house, mm-hmm. and then...
But the more involvement you get from the very beginning and get people sucked in from the beginning and interested, the greater your success rate is going to be.
All right, well... We'll pull you in earlier.
So, where are we? Can you put the outcomes up front, move it up in the application, and then the call?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the outcomes was a new piece that was just added in the last 2 years.
Oh.
That's why I kind of got stuck at the end. There wasn't a lot of thought process put into it, to be honest. It was a reaction to...
Well, you couldn't have it before.
...legislative
feedback
we received during... During two cycles ago, the bill, when it was heard, we got some feedback that legislators weren't happy with, well, I don't care about how many acres. What does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to come up with some canned outcomes to put there, and then people to develop their own, and that was just, it was a piece that got left on the table during staff transition that never fully got developed, to be honest with you.
Well, great that you got it in there, and that's something that we wouldn't have even looked at until 3 to 5 years after the first proposals were implemented.
Yeah.
We didn't have it done yet.
Right. It's what Joe was talking about with the outcomes is more like looking at the final reports and giving us a tool to be able to say, here's what we, what the outcomes were from this many of acres in this area of the state or whatever the case may be. That's more of a final report tool.
So how much is realistic that we can actually do on the calling criteria now in terms of changing that, other than moving the order of the outcome, you know, in the call and in the application?
Well, it's limited to 100 words. I just found it back here. 100 words for the outcome, and that's the part we care about.
Well, that's appropriate.
We can, yeah. I mean, increasing words in certain sections
that's
is a very easy fix.
Easy.
Right. Adding a text box is a very easy fix, or a yes or no checkbox. Other things are not easy. Like, budgetary changes are very, very, very difficult with complicated programming. Things like that.
Those are the three asterisks?
Yeah, well, number 9 should have been asterisk too.
Okay.
Because that whole, the
whole
parcels is all linked to the way the system was created to do mapping.
And how they break it out.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to even be possible, to be honest. I had to check with our IT people.
Couldn't they do it verbally in their design and scope of work and say, these are the most important ones?
Right, yep, we could do it that way.
I mean, at least we could do that. I think that's a good question
you definitely
to ask
have,
proposers
you know,
to prioritize.
You could have people putting in information at two places.
Which we want to eliminate, really. Okay, so do you want to have... do you want to have that question on there? Is this a one and done?
So I was going to maybe suggest for number 8, we could have a box on the budget page saying, you know, is this project scalable? Tell us how this would be scalable, how administrative costs would be affected, and how outcomes, how the outcomes or outputs would be affected. So it would just be a text box that would be, you know, whatever, 25 words or whatever you guys think.
So
that's an easy fix.
So what would happen then if a program comes in and they say, this is not scalable, I want $15 million or nothing?
Then
and you guys
decide.
And then you guys decide.
That's our job.
I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised to see that. But
I also wrote down, you know, I wonder if there's any kind of, you know, guidance that could put, you know, when I said the whole thing about projects and about, you know, proposing just a certain amount, or if people were to be told they're going to get 100% or nothing, what I would do if I was a proposer is instead of proposing my $18 million one package, I'd submit five $4 million packages. And so all of a sudden we'd have proposals like this because people want at least something, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, there's a pro and con to that whole thing.
Do people game the system no matter what?
No matter what. So the other thing I thought of was, what is there any kind of a guidance statement on scale where we could just say, you know, that very seldom is anything over, you know, $8 million. I mean, what's the average? The average proposal of this, we recommend you, you know, do this. We'll scale. Most things are scaled. So I don't know. And maybe it's not worth it at all. Maybe we just see what happens. But, yeah, you're going to game the system. Hopefully people will look to past spending recommendations and see that. But then again, if you all of a sudden, if you're used to putting in $15 million and getting $8 million, why would you put in $8 million thinking you're going to get $5 million?
You know, it's not the end of the world the way it is.
No, the world has not ended yet.
Staff, you're compiling all of these. You know what we're going to do on each one of these things as we go. Yeah. So at least we've got an answer to the first half of line 8. You know, describe and quantify scalability. And you are asking generically how it affects the administrative staff. That's a good start.
Yeah.
Maybe by the next meeting, we'll, in the notes section, we'll put down the action that we'll do to address for people who aren't here.
And will you put the verbiage, too?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, what about ranking and prioritizing parcels without having it tie into the numeric, matrices towards the end?
Can I ask a question about parcels? In the parcel lists that are submitted, and I'm asking this of those that are submitting as well as the staff. Of the parcel lists that are submitted, how many of them go forward without changes?
Zero.
Right. I'm really interested in how parcels are prioritized. I'm not interested in a parcel list. I don't know what that means.
Right.
For anybody else.
Well, then you want to see their process.
Right? I want to see the process. Yeah. How are you deciding?
We have that. We've
been asking
that.
But the parcel list itself seems silly to me.
I agree.
Unnecessary.
And honestly, for us, it is. And even you're almost indirectly, I think the unintended consequence is you're kind of making it a system that we want to do it in phase one, phase two, phase three, because you can't pay for things retroactively and you can't work with these landowners ahead of time because you won't be compensated for it. You're building a system that likes to use the last appropriations money to kind of figure out the next appropriations money. It gets it kind of complicated for everybody, where if you are kind of doing, I think what you're saying is to have, you really want to know how we're prioritizing, how we're figuring out cost versus benefit, how we're figuring out where it makes sense to buy land. That's what you really want to know about what we're doing to make sure that we're doing something that's additive to the conservation goals.
I will tell you, I've used those parcel lists and gone down them item by item, and I found repeats that said were funded in past years and that are showing up again.
I'll just say that certain projects just have a list that they use for the same application every year, and it's a running list that that's the priority list. And it's the same list that goes on each one.
I know that, but what I'm saying is what I found is at least one or two that they said that they had achieved in prior projects.
They already bought that parcel and said
correct.
New parcel.
Yeah, they
correct.
Just hadn't taken it off.
Oh, it's busy work.
Okay.
It's busy work.
So there's no value in it at all?
I don't think so.
Sometimes you have to maybe look at the specific TRDS, but they'll might have 10 parcels for Smith WMA. And it's, parcel
changes.
Call them Smith WMA parcel, and it's not really the same parcel. It's usually a different one.
Right.
You know, what I'm really
and that's
interested
totally.
And I completely agree. Parcel lists are useless, and I will be the first to admit that I never read a parcel list because I haven't seen any.
I'll be the second to admit.
I did, but it didn't seem like it meant anything.
Well, see, I wasn't satisfied. I jumped there faster than you did, apparently. But I am frustrated, I guess, that we get so many people, and I'm going to pick on WMAs because it's easy to pick on, who, want to do WMA acquisition in, the western part of the state. And I don't feel comfortable that we have a very good handle on knowing how to determine which one of those ought to be done. If it's in my backyard, it's the most important project kind of thing, which I get where someone living in a little town out in western Minnesota feels that way, but our job is to do the best projects throughout the state. And there has to be some ranking somewhere from the DNR, I would assume, of these are the potential acquisitions and how it falls. Maybe it's in the top 10% or the bottom third, or I don't know what. It doesn't have to be this is the number one. and this is the second, and this is the third, but something that gives us a feeling that the folks that are coming in here are doing the most overall important for the state, not the ones that they're most passionate about because they have a personal connection.
So you want a third-party organization to rank?
Well, I'm wondering, does the DNR have a ranking?
Yes.
By region?
Yes. They do.
And how?
And it's used in the CPL program, because the one, it's used in a couple of different areas. Way back when, Joe and I go way back in PF, there was a project that Maurer County wanted, and it was on the DNR's list for a while, and then it looked like it was never going to happen, and then we were able to get it back on the DNR's list. But the DNR has a list, and in order to get the money through the PF Big Block grant, the local chapter had to submit a document signed by the regional DNR manager saying, this is on our list and we want this. So there is such a thing, and it's used widely outside of the this level process.
But we never know whether the folks coming in here asking for money to do WA projects are on the top quarter.
But we can ask for it.
And that's what I'm trying to go for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the criteria when we're going to fund a program, can we require that the criteria is that the projects, the WMA projects, are in the top quartile, or something
well,
like that.
Except the proposals we're going to get are from those WMAs that aren't very high on the DNR's list, because the DNR is programmed to get X number of dollars every year.
So
they just go down their list.
Do we want to do bottom quartile projects?
Well, I mean, that's why we're getting the projects, because if you're ranked high in the DNR, why spend a lot of effort to come here if you're going to get funded through money in our
already? Sell the DNR for one thing.
No, true, but then that's found out by somebody. But if you're ranked high in the DNR list, they're not going to come here because it's not worth their effort.
DNR has a couple different lists.
Oh, yeah.
They make a cut and they bust a dozen.
Yeah, but every year, though, because they have a steady stream of money to purchase the
DNR. On that list of dozens, there are projects on there, parcels that are extremely valuable but may not make the cut for many years because they're not in an area of emphasis for DNR.
Right.
So you see some of those projects coming through as well.
Well, I'll also say that, you know, there's a little, if you look at the DNR list, it's not as if there's kind of this, the big scrolls of this list where there's number one, number two, number three. It's more malleable than that. And part of it is, I mean, part of what makes it on the list, it kind of is also a little bit incestuous, because they're also trying to figure out of what things are going to likely get funding, and that moves it up the list. So if you're saying that it's something that is going to be funded by the Outdoor Heritage Funds, or they think that might be the case, that kind of moves it potentially up the list because it's available. So there's still an element of it that, in that part, I think what makes it confusing is still a lot of it is driven just on what is perceived to be an opportunity, either because of a willing seller or because, and that's what makes it, I think, what you're getting at, David, in terms of you're really wanting to know what is the top priority from an ecological conservation standpoint, not necessarily what is the most for sale, because that's an ephemeral thing. That's a moving target.
Well, and I don't think we should be completely rigid on anything, but I think we should be prescriptive in terms of an ecological ranking being high.
Right.
But David, how about, because you are going to purchase 80 acres next to a WMA and make it larger, does that give it a higher ranking than giving 80 acres in a place that's absolutely got nothing else around it? Or maybe it helps to gain a foothold where others want to see this grow?
Well, I would hope the DNR's process talks about landscapes versus parcels. If there's not a WMA somewhere and a need for one, that ought to go through a review, and it ought to be, hey, we've decided we need to do a project here, and it's not
an opportunity here.
You know, but we're going to key in on this and look at it as a bigger deal versus the I like the 80 acres.
Well, and following along directly with that, what I was trying to say, talking about, you know, an old mower PF thing, in order to put in the request through PF in the big block grant, we had to have the document signed by the land manager saying DNR will take this as ownership. I mean, that was one of the issues with the White Earth Nation. DNR didn't want it. They said, we don't want it. We don't want to own it. And therefore, you're stuck. But if we're going to say, you know, if I'm coming in with my application and I say, and the DNR is going to own this, or Fish and Wildlife is going to own this, or Clay County is going to own this, then there should be something that I provide as part of my documentation that says, and we, Clay County, DNR, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, agree to accept it. So then we at least know that that is something that they want, if that's where you're trying to go with it. Because if it's not something they want, they'll tell you.
And just know that their willingness to accept also is based on what the relative cost is to DNR. It's a different list. If an NGO is buying it to give it to DNR, that's kind of one thing. If they're having to use some of their own appropriation money, whatever it is, if they get it, to buy it themselves, that's another thing. So the willingness to get it, if it's quote-unquote free, is a different kind of list. So that's what also helps to drive that, why they're going to sign that letter or not, saying, yeah, we'll take it.
And if they're going to sign the letter saying they're going to take it, they've already looked at it to see, is this in an area where we can start to build a corridor? Is it going to connect two things that are far apart? You know, this 80 acres is in the middle. We're going to start, you know, this is the long-term plan. Or do they look at it and say, and DNR has done that with my home PF chapter. We don't care that you can buy that entire parcel. We don't want it. It's in the middle of nowhere. Sure, it's great for the local guys, but we will not take it. And then if that's the case, then we should be thinking as a council of, if it's not attractive as a freebie to somebody they want to give it to because they can't hold land, do we want to fund it? And I think you get an objective, somewhat objective viewpoint from a third party of whether this is good or not.
A lot of this stuff is handled behind the scenes of the
I'm sure it is.
With
it is.
Reimbursement and stuff. And so an NGO isn't going to buy land that the state doesn't want. I mean, that's all worked out before the deal is done. And
no, but it may not have the same ecological ranking.
Right.
I mean, I know there have been people who come in here and have asked for and received money who have done projects because they're in their backyard and they can do the projects, but if all of us were to have gone out and looked at this one versus that one, we would have said, why in the world did we do this one? It doesn't make any sense. And that's where I'm looking for that ecological, you know, criteria. I mean, it's almost like what Tom Cole put together in terms of a criteria. Here's the criteria for the project. Now there's the whole price issue.
Right.
But we understand this one's really up there, and this is okay, and this probably we shouldn't be very interested in. And we want to do the ones that are up there.
So I'm just to recap, I'm hearing that you guys want an additional text box added, something about explain the process used to select, prioritize the parcels on your list, and give us an example of your ecological criteria.
And eliminate the parcel list.
Well, that is required in law, so what we can.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
You don't have to read it, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could just not print it out for you guys, but a couple meetings ago, certain other council members who were really wanted that list.
Let's leave it on there for now, but let's add the
additional text box.
Yeah, and not just the text box, but attach your selection worksheet, you know, or your, you know, they all have these worksheets that they go through. And a lot of them have provided them already. Attach your, what's it called?
Selection criteria.
Yeah, the criteria, the worksheet, whatever your worksheet is.
But is there a consistent worksheet? Does the DNR, in the example of the government, does the DNR have an ecological worksheet that they compare projects?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a SWOT score.
So let's talk about doing projects above a certain SWOT score.
to worksheets that people attach are for sign-up programs.
For what?
For the sign-up program.
Okay.
We don't know what the parses are. So
right,
those are
right.
the programs that are required
right.
to do a worksheet if they can't give us a parcel list.
Can we just ask, what did you call it, a squat score?
Squat score. I think we actually had them come in.
Say it fast.
We could ask for that number.
But
you should ask how it's derived.
You should ask how it's
okay.
Would it be advantageous to have groups come in and talk about how they prioritize? And
you know, I think it would, but for me, it's how do we compare not what these folks are doing to what these folks are doing, but how do we get a consistent comparison of what we're doing? Because if I listen to what you do for your group, and you do for your group,
it's all good.
And you do for your group,
yeah.
You know, I can't differentiate on a scale that we're being asked to do, which is statewide.
Right.
So your criteria that I think will need to be regional.
And that's cool. I'm absolutely.
Doesn't mean you need to fund regional, but it means that
right.
you're
but
measuring.
You're right. You need to measure it, or the woods parcel differently than regional.
Right.
But I mean, just what if? What if it's not the same, and are we expecting everybody to get in the box? What if their program is very specific to one particular type of activity, and therefore their ranking process is different?
I'm okay with exceptions. I just want to know where it fits and why. Right now, I don't have any way to compare that and understand it.
So that's like not going to be the final determination, and that's why we keep talking about not having it all numerical. That there has to be some subjectivity to whatever you want to call it, the bang for the buck or the moving the needle or something like that. I think we should try to quantify it as much as we can in as much as there are data available for us to compare. But that's not the only story or determinative.
I mean, you know, think of Cass County, who, rightly or wrongly, their criteria is how do we get parcels that allow us access to other parcels. Has nothing to do with the ecological ranking, and yet we can consistently fund them. You know,
some have.
We've consistently funded them as a group. You know, and we should have the ability to hear people who don't fit the mold perfectly and explain it. But it would be nice to have some criteria so that we understand that we need to ask why is this different and why does it matter versus trying to ferret it out in a 10-minute exchange back and forth in a presentation or reading it in criteria.
So even in the prairie, if you had a group that was trying to do the native prairie bank versus stream restoration, you would see those being consistent?
No, I wouldn't. Okay. But if I were doing WMA's acquisition in the prairie region, I'm guessing there are projects that are high ecological caliber and ones that are moderate. And some that are, geez, I wonder if this really will make a difference at all.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a little confused on how we would get consistency in a process when we're
I'm asking
everything
the
is
DNR
so
has, since they're the gorilla in the room, do they have a ranking system that we can use?
Oh.
I think there are elements of it, in my opinion, there are elements of it that you can. I think that's you should really kind of paw into their SWAT process and others that are out there, because there are statewide ranking processes that are out there. And then figure out kind of what makes sense.
Well, why couldn't we ask them to come and present that at the February 7th or whatever date that is meeting? Let's do that. 11. The 11th? At 11.
Are we meeting in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Right? We don't have an agenda.
The date reserved in case.
We might be doing more of this.
I don't care.
But this is what I'd like to do at this point. I'd like to, I'm getting tired of this.
I mean, my brain is getting fried.
I think it's great.
I'd like to work through 14, and the reason is because I want to address these big programmatic ones. And we're already through 9. We're going to call the DNR to do that SWOT process presentation. We're going to add a describe your selection methodology text box, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a start. I want to say that's what we're going to do so far. And then I'm going to skip 10 for now, and I want to look at 11, 13, and 14 about how to, you know, this track record thing is important, but I know that, staff is on them all the time about the required reporting, and that's something that we only started looking at a couple years ago.
So when I was looking this over, I had a brief discussion with our IT guys just quickly yesterday. I already had a conference call scheduled. And we may be able to do something like pull in a table that will say year and how much money they got. And then how much we could do potentially pull from the status reports, how much they've spent to date as far as the last status report was concerned, or if they have a final report, how much they spent in the final report. But I don't need to work out the details of that. And it's not always like an apple to apple, because it needs to be programmed in a way that the current proposals coming in get matched up with things that are already in the system. So that's kind of a glitch on how to make that work. And certain programs, like DU, for example, in the beginning, their programs were restoration or acquisition and enhancement. Well, then later on, they split it out where 1 year they do acquisition, 1 year they do enhancement.
Right.
So it's not always going to be an apple-to-apple comparison. So just knowing that it won't be perfect, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, some of the savvy proposers are coming in with that right now. I mean, the last couple times, mm-hmm. and there were a whole lot of them this year that came in with their track record.
We want
their report card.
Mm-hmm.
So we should ask for a report card, at least.
Maybe
you don't want to track it, maybe you don't want to program it, but we want it as part of their application package.
Do we want it at the application package standpoint, or the
presentation?
Presentation.
Okay, well, make it part of the handout.
Part of the handout.
Advise them that we will be asking about this, and they should be prepared to give us the information up front upon presentation.
And a lot of them have already done that, so that shouldn't be a big shocker.
Okay, we can do that.
Check. You said 1:30.
I did. A precious
night.
And that kind of ties into 12, actually. You know, a couple years ago, I'd get these black and white, you know, the binder with all the black and white stuff, and then I'd get that one map at the end that was the county map with an X on it, or 5 X's along the Minnesota River, or something like that. And it's worth nothing, as I said already. And I said, why can't we get color graphics? You know, first of all, it was irritating to me that we'd come to the hearings, and I'd have to bring a frickin' shopping bag to carry everything back with me. And it's too late then, kind of. I mean, it's not too late, but I'd much rather have it at the front end. And I was told that there's only so much volume that can be absorbed into the application, that they can't take all of this. It's too many pixels or something like that.
Oh, we fixed that. They can attach whatever they want.
Color.
That's duplication.
That's printing.
Well, that's a printing.
I mean, that makes a difference in these things. You can't read boundaries well half the time if they're black and white. I mean, don't give me a black and white one if it's not clear.
When we're looking at over $100 billion, I think it's worth.
Well, and then the other reason I was told was that some people don't have the facilities to produce graphics. Well, I think you probably ought to. You know, get it done.
Google Maps, hello.
Well,
there's like free apps out there.
Well, part of it is what is being duplicated for us by our staff in these black and white.
The cost to duplicate the books and colors.
Well, the whole thing doesn't have to be color, but the map portion.
I know, but the way they do it in volumes, the whole thing's either black and white or full face color.
Yeah. And it's a huge difference in cost. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Could we get it some?
I was just adding it, and it would just be the staff time to collate that. So whatever the additional.
Yeah, because like if the color maps were just printed separately, and then
that the council would be happy to hire a temporary to do collating of stuff.
Absolutely.
Your proposer send you an elephant. Mark,
I'm writing that down.
Mic check.
Okay. You know, if you just give me the stack of maps, I can figure out how to.
It's just three reminders.
If it's got a mark on the top, say which tab goes behind.
I mean, we're asking these proposers to sell a project, and the sooner we get as much relevant data and graphics that sell it, that's what we should be doing right from the very beginning. Not when we're sitting here trying to read something when they're actually presenting. That's just not effective.
One of the things that I like about the LCCMR that I used a lot when I was proposing the LCCMR is the one page required graphic. And that, man, people really put a lot of great thought into representing their project on that one page.
Well, I like that too.
Let's steal it.
Steal the good ideas. Or one or two, maybe even. Anything. So it's not, I don't need this to get it.
Yeah, and just that, I mean, we spent a lot of time, like, getting the right information all perfect, because that was like a PowerPoint handout.
Thanks,
Amy. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Dave.
Are you going to have email? Where are you going?
You don't have email yet.
And running water?
You can be in Antarctica for a
while. It is like 15 plane trips in January, not one outside the country.
Wow.
Okay.
But you're gone at the end of this month. And you're back.
I'm in New York.
Okay.
Say that.
I'm
okay.
Very accessible.
Well,
you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll see.
Thank you. Okay. So
but that's just my thought. I mean, other people who have proposed on LCCMR.
Yeah, it forces you to do a good job.
Really condense all of your thoughts in a graphic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Two pages.
Your binders.
Two pages.
Like, I don't know how.
Two pages.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Two pages. What do you think?
I'm
still
for
one. I want more.
You have a pretty map.
Well, but more may not be more information. May
well,
just be
let's
more.
Let's try it with two and see how.
Let's try it with
some
one and see.
One and a map.
One and one map.
One handle that can be duplicated front to back.
Okay, that's two pages.
Sold. That's what I want.
We need to get you guys a bigger screen TV too.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, to be able to show some of these maps and be able to point,
yeah,
it's just really tough for you guys to see this.
I'm leaving it.
Okay, let's do 13 and 14.
Is that required?
What?
Is the map required? Or is it optional?
I don't know. Sandy should know that.
Well, if you want it ahead of time, then it needs to be required. Otherwise, they're going to bring it at your presentation.
No,
I think that's what I'm saying. We want it up front.
It's
part of the application.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if they're going to bring handouts on the day of the hearing, make them three-hole crunch them.
They
got better.
Or
it's gotten better.
It's gotten better. But yeah. I know there was one year that I handed the whole file to my poor assistant and asked her if she could pretty please punch them in the back of the day. All right.
Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome. I'm leaving.
All right.
Sandy and Amanda, I will send you my two homework assignments within the next day or so you can bunk them into the thing. On the 25th, I will not be here either because it'll be February 25th.
Oh.
So if we have a February 25th,
okay.
The 11th I will.
Okay.
But the 25th is my, I have the Vickers.
Okay.
I'm going to be having a good time somewhere that's not here without email. I will not be excessive.
Good.
I'm going to ship in the Caribbean. So, okay.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank
Special
you.
Thanks to all of you guys that, like, stuck around to help us.
No problem.
Could we just say on 13 and 14 that ask programming to do that and just get it done? They're putting both of those categories into one category now anyway.
How about if we contact them and let Sandy work with them and find out?
Yeah, maybe they've got a better way of doing it.
Yeah, well, we just also want to make sure it's not going to be a $50,000 bill.
Well, if it is, we need to know that, and then we can decide
right.
If it's good. Yeah.
So see what you can do to get that done and how much it costs. And we'll put that in there.
If they can get done, it's not cost prohibitive. The only other thing I can think of is the lead time to beta test this, because this would be something you would have to beta test before we went live.
How much time do you need for that?
Well, there's a lot of changes here.
See, this is why I wanted to do this today.
Yeah. I mean, if we decide everything that we want to change by March, they can maybe get the work done by April 1st, but it won't be beta tested by then. I mean, this is like probably at least a month worth of reprogramming.
We need to make it better.
For company.
We need to make it better. So we should do it. We should do it. We shouldn't not do it because of beta testing, I don't think.
Except if you put out a product that's not tested.
This is not a lot of programming. I mean,
it's not really.
Well, it depends on what their system is.
Well, why are we here if we're not going to make changes?
How about if we
just going to take
Let us find out. And we'll look into it, and we'll continue. She's already got the questions into them, yes. They've already been alerted, so they're working on it from their end. We should know. We'll know definitely by the next meeting, and if it's other stuff that's not cost prohibitive, we can go ahead forward and move right into it.
I think that's enough for today, if everybody agrees.
A lot.
It is a lot.
It's a really great job.
I really, really appreciate people who hung in here today. This is tedious shit.
Well,
but
thank
really
you, Jane,
important.
For putting it all together.
Thanks, Julie.
Getting this organized. I mean, that's
but, you
just
know, you get looking at it by yourself, and you go down a track, and it seems to make sense. And if we didn't do this, it would be bad. It would be really bad if one person did it. And I do have a reason for doing it the way I did, but I hope I'm receptive enough to, you know, have things modified. It's just a starting point. Mm-hmm.
It's a good starting point. Great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next meeting is what?
So no more. No, we're done for January. We're done for January.
We're done for January. We're not. Okay.
Unless something is found out by staff and we want to do some more work, like a work group.
Is that 97?